I'm Laura.
I'm Evie.
Today, we are bringing you a Sports Gazette special on the Paralympics, specifically on the lives of British Paralympians in the UK today.
As the Paralympics approaches in August, we will start to see more media coverage on the achievements and backstories of the fantastic athletes competing, and deservedly so. However, often left out from this representation are the barriers still faced by Paralympians and disabled people in their everyday lives.
In the news at the moment, a report published on the 24th of April, the UN Committee on the Rights of Disabled People found that the UK government has failed to address grave and systematic violations of the human rights of disabled people.
For example, it found that while some reforms and policies have been undertaken to provide financial support, accessible housing and transport, this has been inadequate considering the cost of living crisis.
So just to explain that to listeners, the Convention on the Rights of Disabled People is an international treaty intended to protect the rights and dignities of persons with disabilities. It was open for signatories in 2007 and the UK signed up in 2009, but they're now being seen to not adhere to that or meet its requirements.
But what's this got to do with sport? So actually, within this treaty, it says that governments should ensure that disabled people can participate on an equal basis with others in recreational, leisure and sporting activities.
So when we look into the data and look at Sport England's Active Life Survey and their most recent data, it shows disabled people are almost twice as likely to be physically inactive, at 43% of disabled people who are likely to be inactive, compared to those without a disability, which is only at 23%. This can be attributed to plenty of reasons, such as additional barriers and inaccessible means of accessing sport that disabled people have to face. So this can be anything from not having adequate toilet facilities at sporting venues to simply just not having the access to sporting kind of clubs that will accommodate for disabled people. And this is going to impact people at all levels of sport.
But these barriers don't stop for elite athletes either. We have four case studies highlighting how Paralympians have to face barriers that non-disabled people won't have ever thought of. And these highlight how the government's lack of empathy and their current rhetoric shows a misunderstanding of the lived realities of disabled people. So our first case study is Hannah Cockcroft, who is a seven-time Paralympic champion and is currently the world record holder for the T34 100 metres, 200 metres, 400 metres, 800 metres and 1500 metres. In 2013, she became the first para-athlete to be nominated for the Sports Personality of the Year award outside of a Paralympic year. Now, however, in response to the government downgrading the role of Minister of State for Disabled People, Hannah Cockcroft told BBC Sport that Britain is a really scary place to be as a disabled person right now. Paralympians are almost seen as different to the rest of the disability community. She goes on to say, "We are shown for what we can do, and everyone else with a disability is almost criminalised for what they can't do or struggle to do."
I think that's a really interesting point, because I think it speaks a lot. Obviously, this is a different incident in a wide spectrum of things that the government have done in terms of downgrading the kind of Minister for State for Disabled People to a junior role. But it also speaks to this more recent of like the UN kind of comments on the government saying that they're not meeting the needs of disabled people. And I think that the way she's saying disability is almost criminalised, I think it's such a great point, because the way that Rishi Sunak is talking about it, saying that, essentially referring to the disabled people as kind of like this derogatory term of benefit scroungers or kind of work shy, all these horrible connotations, rather than kind of seeing the reality of their lives. And I think she puts it really well. And I think as well, we'll see a lot of this summer in terms of look at what disabled people can do. And that's great. And we should absolutely celebrate that. But what we're kind of doing here is saying we need to understand that there's still all these barriers, and the government's actually at a kind of lower level below this, like, I guess, surface support, is saying, well, we don't actually want to support these people.
Yeah, I think there's those two narratives that we kind of alluded to earlier, which is, so the government will happily support Paralympians and praise them and probably give them awards on the honours list, and then they'll do not a lot at the kind of like just the ground level, really. And so they compete on this world stage and then they come home and go back to normal, kind of normal, but just sort of lived everyday life and have to face discrimination and being treated as basically non-human again. So
I think as well, she goes on to say in that interview with Emma Smith on the BBC, she said, "I still can't catch a train if there is no one there with a ramp. I still can't catch a bus with my boyfriend. I still can't enter a shop if it has a step to it. Everything that affects disabled people in everyday life still affects me, no matter how quickly I push around a track." I think that difference must be so stark for Paralympians, where they go from an environment that I'm guessing is very well set up for disabled people because it's there to host like the Paralympics, and you'd hope, I'm sure there's still a lot of problems with that too, but you'd hope there'd be a lot more thought put into that, and then coming home to a world that's really not well equipped. It reminds me, I did an interview with the captain of the England women's deaf team. They're not official, but they're kind of, they represent England in a different capacity, and she kind of said, "I went to this tournament and it was like being in a world where kind of everyone either signed or everything was set up to be around this deaf community, and it was like this little almost oasis, and then she came home and realised that that's not real life and that the world puts barriers in place for her, and it was like a real contrast for her." And I imagine it's kind of similar with, I guess, the Paralympics and the reality of life.
Yeah, I think what in Hannah Kotroff saying, coming out and saying this, I think it just relates, it's so relatable, and there's so many people who have the same problem. And I think by the time that Paris 2024 comes along, I don't think this is going to have changed. I think there still won't be trains that can't be caught, there still won't be buses that might, I mean, I don't know, there's so many like sort of horror examples that you see on TikTok and social media, and just about how, like, not only is there not just the accessibility in the first place, but then once you face kind of inaccessibility, not being able to catch that public transport, you then have to go through like weeks and or just hours, which turns into days and turns into weeks of just like trying to talk to like the transport authorities and say this was wrong, yeah, and trying to get your money back and trying to like just let them know and to change their policies. And that's just another small thing that kind of non-disabled people will just never have to deal with. And yeah, so this story, it's not an exception, really. I think it's more.
I was kind of just like thinking through what are our other case studies, and I think at least three out of four of them relate to trains. And if I think about my own life and how central trains are, I don't drive, so they're probably going to play more central role than perhaps other people, but it's still such a central thing in terms of just transport, and you use them so often, even if they are extortionate, and that's a whole other issue. But the lack of accessibility, particularly for transport, and so many things that I just take for granted as someone without a physical disability, yeah, it's just crazy. I think that moves us on to our next case study quite nicely. Anne Wafula-Strike is a Paralympic wheelchair racer and disability advocate. She became the first Kenyan wheelchair racer to represent her country at the Paralympics, competing in the T53 400-metre finals in Athens in 2004. And she competed for Team GB after becoming a British citizen in 2006. So in 2023, this was reported in a Guardian article, Anne Wafula-Strike wrote to the sports minister, Lucy Fraser, about the disability minister at the time, Tom Purslow, saying that current facilities are leading to serious injustice and are preventing disabled fans and athletes from enjoying sport. And I think this talks to the kind of statistics that we brought up at the start of the podcast in terms of the Active Lives survey, how the serious injustice is meaning that people can't enjoy sport. And she highlighted in particular the kind of access to toilet facilities. And this is particularly relevant because a lot of the kind of troubles in council crises and funding are meaning that many councils are closing down public toilets for everyone. Like, so this is meaning that this is particularly impacting disabled people who are going to be more likely to need access to any kind of toilet. But in particular, Wofula Strike highlighted that there are two types of toilets for people with disabilities. So there's the accessible toilets that are big enough to accommodate like a standard wheelchair and have a height adjusted toilet and sink and changing place. And then there's also changing places toilets, and they're bigger and can accommodate disabled people with greater support needs. So those using larger power assisted wheelchairs, those who need one or two carers to accompany them to the toilet, those who need hoists, etc. And while there are more than 250,000 disabled people who need a changing places toilet, there are currently just 1,893 of them registered in various parts of the UK, which is just like astounding how bad that is. And at the moment, it's only going to be getting worse.
Yeah, it feels like, because I think I've seen it talked about as like a time tax, in the sense that because of the lack of toilets and lack of facilities, you are spending additional time, even like planning your day around the fact that there aren't toilets, and you have to plan your movements so precisely and think, oh, like I'm going to be here, so will there be a toilet near there? And then the next place that I go to, or is there going to be a toilet there? Oh, no, I can't go to that place because there isn't one, so we're going to have to meet somewhere else, and that might not be a nicer place. And I don't know, just thinking of all the areas, I don't know, like in London, like all the national parks, like even I struggled to like find a toilet that didn't take like a 10-15 minute walk, and I was like, I'm already in pain now, guys. We need to have more toilets here. And so yeah, it's just that additional time tax again of just that non-disabled people will just not even have to think about. And it's just things like that that I think that the government don't really consider or just factor in into their policy. And yeah, facilities is also just one aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's also like a mental burden, other like as well as a time tax, like just having to go through all that and think about all that and plan it like that. You can't just walk out the door in the same way, or like go out the door in the same way that kind of able-bodied people would be able to. And Wofula Strike actually came out in 2017 and said that on a train she had been forced to wet herself because there were no disabled toilet facilities that accommodated for her on that train. And she spoke in this more recent article in 2023 and said, "This is an urgent issue and needs to be addressed by a change in legislation to ensure that disabled people are not left behind." She's called for a meeting with ministers, and she said that sport is such an important part of society. It's played a huge role in my life, and it's saddening to hear disabled people face barriers to access. So she was speaking particularly about the access to those toilets at sporting places, essentially. But that is obviously an issue across society and not just in sport.
And so while we've spoken about facilities here with Anne Wofula Strike, we're now going to talk a bit more about ableism in terms of verbal ableism and discrimination faced by people that you may encounter in daily life. Will Perry is a British para swimmer specialising in freestyle. He's a world finalist and British record holder, making his Olympic debut at Tokyo 2020. But in 2022, Perry spoke about the ableism he faces in everyday life as someone who lives with dwarfism. And this came after three girls burst out laughing after he walked past them just to go into Tesco. He was just trying to do his daily shop, and he confronted them.
That's an interesting one.
He confronted them and they continued to deny it and accused him of overreacting while they smirked and laughed at him when he walked away. When he got home, he burst into tears and he decided to post something honest to raise awareness and help others who have experienced similar things. And so on the 3rd of January 2022, he posted on Instagram, "In total honesty, I wanted to cry. There are so many occasions where I'm constantly reminded that to some, my presence in life is a joke. Me living to some people is actually hilarious. Why should this be?" And he explained that this wasn't unusual either. And growing up, there were various signs indicating that I wasn't human. I mean, he saw a sign on a dormitory door saying "humans only." And then he was also bullied for his condition at a new school in his early teens. It's really interesting to see how the lack of education in kind of the national curriculum, and just at the kind of school level, like primary schools and secondary schools, me personally, I don't remember being taught ever about different disabilities and I don't know about you, but I think that has a real impact on how, when you grow up and when you live your adult life, it does subconsciously impact how you see people with disabilities. And I think it's, I mean, this is a theory, but I think it's probably in part the reason why we're seeing such a government rhetoric and seeing the government kind of fail to meet the needs of disabled people. It's just my theory that it starts at the school level. But
yeah, I don't think that's a wild theory at all. I don't feel like I was particularly introduced to disabilities or made to just normalise talking about it. Because I think as well, like, people stigmatise it at the, because they've not had that introduction to it at a young age where you're not judgmental. And so later in life, when you're coming at it and you've already got these preconceptions about society and you've already experienced the media that is already ridiculing or speaking in a rhetoric which says that disabled people are lesser, of course there's going to be more likely that you've picked up prejudices and that turns into discrimination. That's still wrong, and these people are still individually wrong, but it's so when those that hasn't been addressed earlier on, then I think it's very clear. And I don't think I came into contact with any disabled people at school, or no one that was kind of very, like, either physically disabled or kind of open in their disability. Yeah, either open or a visible disability. So I think that's certainly something that needs to change and would hopefully help this. But yeah, it's just shocking. And there's not enough education in society as a whole, let alone, like, at school. Education can continue beyond that in public campaigns and different things. And I think often the public campaigns you do see are carrying their own prejudices and their own stigmas themselves, and we've not done enough to address that.
Yeah. I mean, he basically was invited on, like, BBC, like, Breakfast News, and he spoke about how he wanted more education and understanding around dwarfism. And I think it just highlights how, like, even if we did have more education at every level, like, each disability is completely different. And the barriers that each disability faces are also completely different. And so, and on top of that, you've got intersectionality and whether you're a woman, trans, black, Asian, there's all of that as well.
Mm.
So every disabled person's experience is completely different. And I mean, to not even have touched on disability in school is not only shocking, but then you've also got to think about how these campaigns and sort of education pieces really need to look at the individual disabilities too and focus more on the barriers rather than the disability as well.
We'll move on to our final case study then, who's Sam Goff. So she's not currently a Paralympian, but I'm sure she will be in the future. She's currently playing a number of sports, goalball, rowing, blind football. She's the captain of the England women's blind football team. She won bronze with GB at the under-19s Para Youth Games for goalball, and she's on the national talent squad currently for rowing. So she's just a sporting phenomenon. But in September 2023, so this was just a month after she'd competed in the inaugural IBSA Women's World Championships for blind football, she experienced difficulty when no assistance came to meet her after getting a train to Doncaster Station. So she'd come from Edinburgh, she'd called up and been told by staff there that there'll be assistance there to meet her off the train at Doncaster, and she got off and there was no one there. She had to call her mum, who eventually called the police, and she said to Sky News, "It was a nightmare, a really horrendous situation to be in. People have died falling on the tracks before and I thought it was about to happen to me. I was in full panic mode and there was not one person there to help despite me booking assistance before I set out." And I think, again, it's trains, again, it's a vital kind of transport, and she's kind of said after this that I don't feel safe using trains anymore, and she has to travel. She's based in Scotland and the blind football centre is in Hereford. So she's got to do a lot of travelling because there's not a lot of facilities in Scotland. So this is really key to her. And yet she's been made to feel like she can't use it because there simply isn't, A, the awareness that these staff actually care, or not to blame, like, the individual staff, but the system's not in place to kind of get that set up and make sure those connections have happened, or etc. So I think it's just another example in a set of examples that show how lacking the UK is in providing for disabled people and this kind of lack of care by the government.
And it's the fact that this is not the only one time this has happened.
No.
As in, so many other people have experienced this. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands of testimonies on social media that you can find and see. And the fact that this happening one time has not been enough to put in some sort of blanket policy at train stations, for train companies, for train staff, etc. And just general transport.
Well, I don't think this even made national news. I wrote a piece with Sam Gough, which you can find on the Sports Gazette. Please do go and check that out. But I came across this because I was researching that article, but I hadn't... It was featured on Sky News, so maybe if you watch the Sky News channel all the time. But, tuning into the radio, the news, headlines on BBC, I didn't see this happen. She was made to feel like she was going to die, and at Doncaster Station, they don't have the tactile paving, so when you get to the edge of the platform, you have no indication if you're blind and you can't see that. So, for her, this is, a horrendous experience, and that doesn't come anywhere near the top national news. And I find that utterly shocking that either it's happening with a frequency that is no longer newsworthy, or it's not deemed as people caring enough to make it newsworthy, and either one of those is simply outrageous.
I think this is probably a wider problem in society, but that the individual has... The burden is always on the individual whenever there's, a problem. Whether there's racism, in the part... Historically, the burden has always been on, individual black people to make a change, to protest, to be activists. Same thing for, gay and trans people. The individual burden... The burden is on the individual rather than a collective white people taking action to stamp out racism, or, a collective kind of, heterosexual people, cis heterosexual people, taking collective action to stop those barriers. So in this case, I feel that it speaks to the narrative that disabled people are kind of to blame for their own problems, and that I think it speaks to the medical model of disability in a way, which says that a disability is kind of a disease, it's something that needs to be cured. It's something that you need treatment for, and it's not the normal way of being a human, which is obviously horrendous, and that's why it's been phased out. But I still feel that the social model, which is the alternative to that, which is that disabled people are disabled by barriers, and that's what makes them disabled, and it's the social model kind of speaks to the idea that there's no such thing as normal. It's just different. There's no normal or abnormal. Everyone is different. And I don't think the government is, in terms of the government violating the convention, I think a move to improve would be moving to the social model a bit more. Because you wouldn't have situations like this happening, because you would have more collective emphasis on the trained staff to help. And they would have that understanding that it's their responsibility to remove the barriers and not be on Sam Gough for her to just not have it happen to her in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, because now she's not using trains, so it's kind of her individual responsibility to remove herself from that situation.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I guess, they're not explicitly saying that, but the kind of rhetoric the government is using is very much individual blaming, in that you need to work harder, or you need to do X, Y, and Z to prove that you deserve these benefits.
Yeah.
Whereas it should be, how can we collectively look after our society, which is what you're explaining with the social model. And I think a really powerful point to end on, an important point to say. So the Paralympics is going to take place from the 28th of August to the 8th of September. And it's important we celebrate the athletes for their achievements first and foremost. But we hope to raise awareness that while the Paralympians may be put on an equal standing to Olympians at Paris 2024, and rightly so, the lives they live once they take off the kit unfortunately remain very different. And we hope we've explained that in some way today.
Thank you for listening to this Paralympics special podcast on the Sports Gazette, brought to you by Evie Ashton and
Laura Howard.